Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Into the Killing. If this is the first episode you're listening to, thanks for checking us out. For today's episode, we're going back to December 1979. In December 1979, 11 people were killed at a rock concert where the band, The Who, was supposed to play in Cincinnati, Ohio. The seats were unreserved, and there was a stampede as people raced to get seats close to the stage. Also in December 1979, it was certified that smallpox was eradicated, making it the first human disease driven to extinction. Star Trek: The Motion Picture premiered at the MacArthur Theater in Washington, D.C. On opening weekend, it was number one at the box office, making $11 million, breaking records for a three-day weekend. One person who didn't get to see Star Trek: The Motion Picture was 19-year-old Charles Collingwood. That's because he was incarcerated at the Brevard Correctional Institution in Cocoa, Florida. He was serving time for car theft. On December 12, 1979, Collingwood escaped from prison. A massive search for him was conducted, but he was nowhere to be found. At the time of his escape, a 44-year-old correctional officer named John McRae was under investigation because he was supposedly having a sexual relationship with Collingwood. McRae was questioned, and he denied doing anything inappropriate with Collingwood. But investigators were suspicious. They thought he facilitated the escape to avoid getting in trouble for the relationship. The investigators looked into McRae's background, and they were deeply disturbed by what they found. St. Clair Shores is a small city in the Detroit metropolitan area. It is situated on the banks of Lake St. Clair. Across the lake is Walpole Island First Nation in Ontario, Canada. In 1950, St. Clair Shores had a population of just under 20,000 people. On September 9, 1950, 8-year-old Joey Housey went missing while playing on the streets of St. Clair Shores. Searches were conducted for the boy. One of the searchers was 15-year-old John McRae. McRae's mother had been Joey's teacher when he was in kindergarten. 2 weeks after Joey went missing, on September 23, 1950, Joey's dead body was found in a shallow grave in a ravine about 3 blocks from his home. His throat had been slit and his genitals had been slashed with a straight razor. The medical examiner said that there was a distinct sexual element to the crime. He also noted if the murderer is not found, he will probably repeat the performance. So with a sense of urgency, the police set to work trying to determine who killed the 8-year-old boy. Their investigation led them to McRae, who had a sharp razor they used for model airplanes. They found out that the razor had blood on it. On Saturday, September 30th, the police planned on giving McRae a polygraph examination. But when they went to pick him up, he was gone. The next day, a relative in Sarnia, Ontario, which is just down the river from St. Clair Shores, turned him in. McRae explained that on Friday night, he told his father he had a dream about killing Joey. His father took him to the lake and told him he should swim to Canada and never come back if he had anything to do with the murder. McRae started swimming but turned back. He stole a boat and then traveled to Sarnia. Once McRae was in custody, he told the authorities that his memory of the murder was hazy. He said he remembered cutting his neck, but he said that was all he remembered. The next morning, he returned to the body and buried it. He placed a slab of concrete over it. John McRae went to trial in February 1951. Even though McRae was 15 years old at the time of the murder, he was tried as an adult. The trial lasted about 2 weeks. The jury of 6 men and 6 women deliberated for a little less than 3 hours. McRae was found guilty of first-degree murder. The verdict carried with it an automatic sentence of life in prison. So McRae was sent to prison to live out the rest of his life. Unfortunately, it would not work out that way. In 1971, the governor of Michigan commuted John McRae's sentence. This made it possible for him to apply for parole. McRae applied, and he was released in February 1972. He was 37 years old. He had served 21 years for the murder of Joey Housey. Shortly after McRae was paroled, he married a woman named Barbara. Soon afterward, Barbara gave birth to a son, Martin. McRae finished his parole in 1975, and then he and his family moved to Florida. Then he started working as a prison guard. After 19-year-old Charles Collingwood escaped from prison and disappeared, the investigators searched McRae's locker at the prison. They found several concerning items in his locker. They were photographs of a preteen boy. They learned that the boy was 12-year-old Kipling Hess. Kipling had been missing for about 6 months. Kipling had lived with his parents on Merritt Island, Florida, which is about 9 miles from Cocoa. On the morning of March 27, 1979, Kipling left a note at home that read, "Goodbye, Mom and Dad." He left his home and he was seen heading towards school, but he never made it there. In April 1980, over a year after Kipling disappeared, McRae was questioned about his disappearance. When Kipling went missing, the police did not know that McRae was a convicted child murderer. He explained that he had met Kipling 3 days before he disappeared at a carnival. He had volunteered to help search for him, and he handed out missing person flyers. McRae claimed he knew nothing about Kipling's disappearance. He said that he cared for Kipling and he would never hurt him. He also pointed out that the police didn't really have a case against him because they didn't have Kipling's body. 2 weeks after the police interviewed McRae, he and his family packed up and left Florida. Now that the investigators knew that McRae had killed a boy when he was young, and he knew another boy who was missing, they believed that McRae killed Charles Collingwood after he escaped from prison. It seemed that McRae had an urge to kill, so murdering Collingwood would have satisfied that urge. Also, it would ensure that Collingwood didn't talk about their relationship at the prison. The police continued to investigate John McRae. They also decided to see if there were any unsolved murders or disappearances that he may be connected to. They found a very promising case. On April 28, 1977, about 2 years before Kipling's disappearance, 13-year-old Keith Fleming was hanging out with his girlfriend in Cocoa, Florida. When they were done hanging out, she left him at an intersection near her home. When she got home, she told her mother that Keith was hitchhiking home. The mother thought it would be better if she drove him home. So she went to the intersection where Keith had been hitchhiking, but he was gone. Sadly, Keith never made it home. The police thought that Keith was possibly picked up by McRae. McRae was known to frequent the area where Keith was last seen. McRae may have possibly even known Keith. Keith often surfed at Cocoa Beach, and McRae said he liked to watch boys surf there. But once again, since Keith was the missing person, the police couldn't even confirm that he was dead, let alone that McRae kidnapped or killed him. In February 1987, the investigators in Brevard County, Florida, learned that McRae might be residing in Clare County, Michigan. It had been nearly 9 years since he left Florida. An officer in Brevard County called the authorities in Clare County. They asked him if he could confirm if John McRae was living there, and they were wondering if he could check on him. They also wanted to know if any boys had disappeared lately. It turned out one boy in their county had mysteriously vanished. On September 15, 1987, 14-year-old Randy Laufer, who lived in Harrison, Michigan, didn't return home after school. At the time, he was angry at his parents. He wanted to go to a hunting safety class at a sportsman club, but his parents wouldn't take him. So initially, Randy's family thought he ran away. The police had labeled him as a runaway. But after several weeks, they began to wonder if he met with foul play. Then the police got the call from Brevard County about John McRae. They confirmed that McRae did live in the county. He lived about a quarter of a mile away from Randy's home. The Brevard County authorities told the officer in Clare County that they should treat Randy's disappearance as a homicide and investigate McRae as their prime suspect. Hours after the call, the police did exactly that. They learned that McRae was active in the community, especially with children. For example, he was involved with the Boy Scouts and the 4-H Club. He was also known to dress up as a clown and perform at children's parties. They talked to the Laufer family, and they said they knew McRae. In fact, Randy had been to his house several times. The police went to McRae's home. But when they got there, they discovered that McRae and his family were gone. They were able to track McRae down. He was living in a trailer park in Mesa, Arizona. He was questioned about the disappearance of Randy Laufer. Once again, McRae claimed he knew nothing about the boy's disappearance. So like the disappearances of the three other young men, the case went cold. The police were sure that McRae was responsible for at least the murders of the four young men. He admitted that he knew Charles Collingwood, Kipling Hess, and Randy Laufer. What are the odds that a convicted child murderer would know three boys who disappeared without a trace? The fourth boy, Keith Fleming, went missing in an area that McRae was known to frequent. The most logical explanation was that McRae was responsible for their disappearances. But the police couldn't find any of the bodies to prove that the boys were dead, let alone prove that McRae killed them. The police felt like their hands were tied. So the cases remained hopelessly cold. A decade went by. During that time, the trailer that McRae lived in Clare County was taken away, and the barn on the property was torn down. In August 1997, a farmhand was digging up the foundation of the old barn. He found a human skull. The police were called in, and more remains were exhumed. Dental records confirmed that they were the remains of Randy Laufer. A forensic anthropologist examined the remains. The first thing he noted was that Randy's left collarbone had been cut nearly in half. It was either hacked or a blade cut into him via rocking motion. Next, he determined that Randy had been cut in half at the midsection. Finally, on the pelvic bones, there were knife marks. The marks on the pelvic bones made it clear that Randy had been sexually mutilated. The investigators immediately noted that the first boy McRae killed, Joey Housie, had also been sexually mutilated with a blade. One investigator thought that the sexual mutilation was McRae's signature. The investigators wanted to know where the body was buried in relation to where McRae's trailer and barn were located. It turned out that Randy was buried just outside the barn, about 15 feet from the back door of the trailer. The investigators believed that McRae liked to keep trophies of his victims, so he buried him close to the house so he could relive the murder in his mind. In October 1997, McRae and his son, Martin, were arrested for the murder of Randy. The authorities believe that Martin, who was friends with Randy, helped dispose of the body. McRae had a heart condition, so the authorities did not think he would have been able to bury Randy's body by himself. But the charges against Martin were dismissed because he was 13 at the time of the murder and he would not be charged as an adult. After McRae was arrested, his van was searched for clues. The van had a bumper sticker that read, "Have you hugged your kids today?" One thing that people noted is that they often saw McRae's van parked near primary schools and playgrounds. In his van, they didn't find anything that incriminated him in the murders or the disappearances of the boys. But they did find binoculars. They shined a black light on the inside of the van and discovered it had been splattered with semen. 64-year-old John McRae went to trial for the murder of Randy Laufer in December 1998. The district attorney explained what he thinks happened. Randy was mad at his parents, so instead of going home, he went to the McRae's trailer. That first night, Randy was tortured. The torture could have lasted for days. He was then killed and cut in half. It was possible he was dismembered beyond that. Then he was buried. The jury deliberated for less than 3 hours. Nearly 47 years after he was convicted of first-degree murder the first time, John McRae was found guilty of first-degree murder again. Once again, he was given an automatic life sentence. John McRae would not be the only one in his family who had a horrifying criminal conviction. In 2000, McRae's son, Martin, who was 26, was arrested for molesting two girls on a four-wheeling trip. One girl was his daughter and one was 8 years old. In 2001, Martin pleaded guilty to lewdness with a minor and he was sentenced to 10 years to life in prison. John McRae's lawyers appealed his first-degree murder conviction. In April 2004, his conviction was overturned. The Supreme Court of Michigan ruled that a witness should not have been able to testify. McRae went to trial again in May 2005. Once again, he was convicted of first-degree murder and he was sentenced to life in prison. The authorities in Florida approached McRae and offered him immunity if he revealed the location of the remains of Charles Collingwood, Keith Fleming, and Kipling Hess. McRae maintained that he was innocent and had nothing to do with their disappearances. Just over a month after he was convicted a second time of murdering Randy Laufer, he died in prison. John McRae was 70 years old. Whatever he knew about the disappearances of the young men, he took to his grave. Investigators are confident that John McRae committed other murders that they don't know about. There are massive gaps in McRae's history where the authorities have no idea what he was doing or where he was living. The investigators told Cold Case Files that if sheriff's departments or police departments have unsolved cases of male teenagers who went missing or were killed between 1972 and 1997 in Michigan, Florida, Arizona, or the surrounding states, they should consider McRae a suspect. McRae should definitely be considered a suspect if the bodies were found in a shallow grave and they were sexually mutilated. Sadly, we may never know the actual number of people John McRae killed. The remains of Charles Collingwood, Keith Fleming, and Kipling Hess have never been found. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Our fact checker, sound designer, and producer was Nell Cloutier. If you just discovered this podcast, please check out Criminally Listed on YouTube. We have over 300 videos, and most videos feature three bizarre true crime stories. You can find it at youtube.com/criminallylisted. Also, please subscribe or follow this podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. But that's all for this week. Thanks again for listening. Please take care of yourself and stay safe.